Okay, Sasha, here we are talking about our projections based purely on instinct and, you know, resumes and whatnot about what we believe are probably going to be the highlights of 2014, particularly in award or quality movie context. I'll just review mine really quickly, and then we'll go and focus on yours. I've got a whole rundown about 19 films that I feel are clearly going to be, most likely going to be either really good or be Oscar nominated. From the top of the list, I've got Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice, which is adaptation of a Thomas Pynchon novel about L.A. in the 60s involving a private detective played by Joaquin Phoenix looking for an ex-girlfriend. You know that's going to be atmospherically, right? Can't beat that one. So, you know. So we got also Birdman, which is Alejandro González Iñárritu's film, which we're almost certainly going to be seeing in Cannes. I would be flabbergasted if it doesn't turn up there. There's, I don't really believe that Christopher Nolan's Interstellar is a award quality thing, because he doesn't make Oscar movies. He makes his own movies, you know. And I don't think that's going to be, it's going to, you know. I've got it, I just realized I got the wrong title here. J.C. Chandor's film, which is currently filming, a most violent year. Not very, but a most violent year. And then, of course, Ridley Scott's a Bible movie, Exodus, Moses and the Hebrews and the Egyptians and crossing the Red Sea and everything else. Pete Hammond was agreeing with me that he looks funny in his Egyptian guise, because, you know, Moses was a prince of Egypt, and he looks like a CAA agent. He was saying, you know? He has a CAA agent haircut, and it looks funny for...
Oh, God. You know? Oh, dear.
Yeah. All right, Bennett Miller's Foxcatcher, which of course aligns with yours. We can talk about that in a second. No, there's no question he is that type of filmmaker. Fincher, of course, Gone Girl, but that's kind of a potboiler. Yeah, I don't know that there's going to be a lot underneath that. That's going to be, you know, I don't know about that, if that's going to be much more than a gripping film that, you know, obviously Fincher's got the chops and the intrigue, and it'll always be a first-rate experience. But I don't know that there's anything under that either. It was written by a former Entertainment Weekly writer. And then you got Angelina Jolie's Unbroken, which everybody keeps telling me is oh, absolutely, it's got to be, you know, it's the Coen brothers wrote it, and it's about survival on the seas, and then Japanese
prison. Well, tell me when you want me to comment on any of these that you're saying, because
you're right, I'm doing too much talking, and I'm not letting
I'm happy to have you do the summary, but there are a few points I'd like to make. Do you want me to just interrupt, or do you want me to...
Please interrupt and start from what we talked about so far.
Okay, well, first of all, I never go into the Oscar year looking at movies that I think will be Oscar friendly, quote unquote, or that
why not
need to be, because I think you dumb down the whole process when you do that. This will sound terrible to people, but after my experience with the Oscar race, it's a lot like what Charles Foster Kane says in Citizen Kane, when they say people will think, and he says, what I tell them to think. The whole point is that
that's funny.
You're going to be a sheep herder, and you're going to be one of the people setting up the Oscar race. You don't start with looking for the king's speech.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't. You know, not only will your soul die, but you'll lose the benefit of what the Oscar race can be at its best. And at its best, it can recognize the best in cinema, whether it's a genre movie, whether it's a comedy, whether it's a effects-driven film, whether it's a drama, whether it's a period drama. Now, we know what their favorites are. We know how they vote, but...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody should ever start the Oscars with what are the Oscar voters gonna like, because I just think that dumbs everything way down, and I know
they
that's
like
how
the same things every year.
That's how they do it. Yeah, that's why when someone's predicting the Oscars, like if you're Scott Feinberg or whatever, or you're Pete Hammond or you're Chris Tapley, and you're putting out a list of these are my predictions, what I think they're going to go for.
Mm-hmm.
Then, by all means, drop it down, dumb it down to, like, you know, what movie has Nazis? What movie takes place in the 1940s? What movie has redemption at the end, you know? Do that. But if you want to look at movies that you think are going to be good enough to say, look, these are the movies, these look really promising as great films, And the Oscar voters will hopefully catch up to that. They will recognize them as great films rather than if you deliver them as a sheepherder, weatherman, whatever you are.
Yep.
If you deliver them just the movies that you think they're going to go for, they're going to be bored with that and pick something else anyway. I think that's, I mean, that I know it sounds like nonsense. Believe me, I hear it coming out of my mouth and I'm saying, what the fuck is she talking about? If I'm saying that, other people are going to be thinking that. But I in other words, when you dismiss Gone Girl, I think that's crazy because I know David Fincher's work and I know what a great filmmaker he is. And same with Christopher Nolan.
But did you happen to
he makes
leaf through the?
Are great enough that yeah. people stop and pay attention to them.
No,
and
absolutely. You always will pay attention. It will always be like, wow, let's really get into this. He'll never just do a throwaway. He'll never just like bang something out because you know he's not on that level. We all know that. But still, it's a page turner. It's an airport movie, basically. You know, it's something you read it on an airplane flight. It's not
not necessarily. Not necessarily.
All right, okay.
I mean, there are a lot of books you can say that about, that were turned into...
I mean, it's one of those things where, the bad husband who probably killed his wife and all that. You know, I'm not going to talk about the plot. We probably know what the plot is, but...
Well, have you read the book?
Yes, I know what happens.
But have you read the book?
No. I know what happens.
There's no husband kills the wife scenario. That's not part of what the story is at all. So...
You want me to read the
summary? Do yourself a favor and read it because you will be tripped out. And believe me, you need to get past the first third of it to understand what that book is about. It is a phenomenal portrait of a sociopathic female of the kind only our modern society could create.
No, I got it.
Because of helicopter parenting, because of the perfectionist tendencies women have to be the perfect woman and to be raised as the perfect child. And, you know, Amazing Amy, right? She's the character. She's raised by these psychologist parents who created this perfect child. And she's so perfect that they made a series of books about her called Amazing Amy. And in those books, she rights all the wrongs of society because she's Amazing Amy. Well, she grows up to be Amazing Amy, and she's this beautiful blonde and... She's perfect in every way, and everybody envies her, and the author goes into all of this in a very clever, very interesting way, and by the end of it, you're just like, she's brought you to your knees. Right. I don't know what they're going to do with the movie, because I hear that they changed it, but I was just like, by the end of it, I was like, holy mother of God,
yeah.
That is a terrifying villain. So right. Whatever you think of Gone Girl, trust me, you're on the wrong track there.
Well, I'm looking at the plot summary, and it obviously is about an apparent murder by a bad husband. I mean, I'm not going to say where it's going to go, but it definitely starts in that direction. So.
Okay, no. Just read it. You'll see what I'm talking about. Trust me. It is not, I mean, that. Yes, that's... You can't... You have. If you say that, then you don't give away the plot.
I'm not giving away anything. I'm just saying...
No, I'm telling you that's a MacGuffin.
It's a red herring.
A red herring.
Okay.
Yes, that's a red herring. That's
right.
Not what the story's about. It's brilliant. It's one of the most brilliant books I've ever read, and I can't wait to see what Fincher does with it. Whatever it's going to be twisted and diabolical.
Good.
And
great.
Very, very hardcore. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, people are going to say, oh, the Oscar voters won't go for it. It's not... You just can't go that way. I can't. Not after...
I don't want to even think about what they're going to do. They're not going to miss... Whatever is really good, they're going to miss it anyway, so...
And you can't... Yeah, you just can't look at it that way. Like, you know, we all loved Inside Llewyn Davis and
right.
Hope, you know, talked that movie up all over the place. And it was advertised like crazy. And they did the whole music tour with T-Bone Burnett and Oscar Isaac.
They wouldn't touch it, yeah.
They didn't fucking touch
right.
it, so
right.
You never know, but I don't think that's any reason to dismiss movies
right.
out of hand. That's too cynical, I think.
All right, so let's, rather than my talking about my tops, let's just go into what you have written.
Now, let me say this about Unbroken, I have to say.
Oh, fine.
The reason people are saying that about him, and I agree with you, like, there's a part of me that, and I hope it doesn't mean I'm a sexist, you know, but there's a part of me that thinks... I don't think it would matter who was directing it, whether it was Angelina Jolie or Johnny Depp, you know, if it's an actor and this is only their second movie, it's hard for me to imagine, oh, yeah, that's going to be a huge Best Picture contender. Although, let's talk about Kevin Costner. That's his first movie,
right.
Dances with Wolves, and Robert Redford, Ordinary People, was his first movie. So it's possible that she could hit it out of the park with this. the two things to know about Unbroken, Roger Deakins is shooting it, and the Coen brothers wrote it, or co-wrote it. So you get Roger Deakins to be your cinematographer, you don't have to do a hell of a lot. You're going to have a great movie.
No, it's still got to be about something other than just a guy survives. That's what Unbroken alludes to. It means relentless, how he will not be bowed, he will not be taken down by hard circumstances. That's what I'm getting. I mean, am I missing something?
Right. Well, we'll see. We'll see what it is. I don't know. I just, in Deakins we trust, you know.
I think he's wonderful. I love him, but it still just comes down to, because it's going to be handsome or extraordinary.
Yeah.
In a visual sense, doesn't mean it's going to be an Oscar movie.
People are just doing that thing where they're you know, second guessing Oscar voters and imagining what they think they will go
for. You honestly think for a third year in a row, people are going to be interested in a movie that's at least a significant portion of which is about surviving on the seas in a rowboat? Like, you know, in other words, it's going to be All Is Lost again. It's going to be Life of Pi again. Do you think that's really going to be something that people are going to be, oh, yeah, let's see that?
I don't know what it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be just one person in the cast, though. Do
it's
you?
About what he did. It's about, or it's a real life. It's about a guy who survived a, in a boat on the open seas and then got picked up by the Japanese and was put into a prisoner of war camp. So it's half Life of Pi and half, you know, King Rat or, you know, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, but it's one of those things, and it's basically,
right.
He's going to make it, you know.
I just don't think you can discount it right now. We don't know enough about it, so it has to be considered in the major movies that are coming. I think I put mine in my wild card category. I put it there.
Well, let's go over your titles. Top tier, you say. Let's go from the top.
Oh no, I put Unbroken in second tier, and I did that because, as of yet, Angelina Jolie is untested as a director. So, and I usually go by the director. You know,
did you not see her Bosnian?
It was
thing?
Yeah, it was okay. It was okay. It was good, but
I thought it was pretty good.
It was pretty good, but pretty good ain't gonna cut it, is it? It's gotta be great, but it might be great. Mm-hmm. I'm keeping the door open. I just don't have it on the. Mm-hmm. It's not on my top. It probably should be, I suppose, but
mm-hmm. Right.
There's just not enough information about it.
In your top tier, you have Bennett Miller's Foxcatcher. I believe that you're right, but don't you think that there's probably a reason why it didn't come out last year? Just to be devil's advocate?
I think that what I think is, honestly, that, yes, that's usually the reason, but I also have a feeling that Steve Carell might want to win Best Actor, and last year there was no chance he was going to win Best Actor. It was too competitive. I mean, it might end up being that competitive of a year again, but...
He looks wonderful, doesn't he? It's so cool that a comic actor is gone in this direction and done the makeup, and he looks exactly like... he's a DuPont. Isn't that the name? The actual guy who killed somebody in the 90s, a wrestler who he knew, had a relationship with.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you never really know why people... Monuments Men obviously turned out to be a huge dud, and that's why they moved it, but you just never... Wolf of Wall Street was not, and they were planning on moving that.
Yeah.
You never really know, I guess.
Isn't that amazing that Paramount, in hindsight, that Paramount is actually saying, maybe we should bring out the Jack Ryan movie and put Wall Street into February because it's, Scorsese and it's dense and it's ambitious, but it might not be. And it obviously turned out to be a huge financial thing. And the Jack Ryan movie, which they were envisioning, you know, do big-time Jack Ryan business, that turned out to be kind of a disappointment. That didn't really do very much at all. I mean, it did okay,
well,
but not much.
That's why William Goldman says nobody knows anything. That's where that phrase...
Yeah.
That's what that is aimed at. It's not about the Oscar race, but it applies there. But it's really about nobody knows anything. Nobody in Hollywood knows anything. They pretend that they know if we move this movie and move that movie, that it's going to make a lot of money and people are going to love it. But they don't really know.
Right.
You know, you don't really know until the movie hits theaters what the reaction's going to be.
Okay. All right, so anyway, we've talked about Foxcatcher. You've mentioned that I should don't underestimate Gone Girl. Now, Jersey Boys. Now, that is... you know, of course, a film version of a very popular jukebox musical that's been going on Broadway for a pretty long time. I don't know how many years, like 2010 or 2011, something like that. It's been around for quite a while. And still going, I think. It's like Chicago. But why would you imagine, I mean, I know that Clint Eastwood does have a musical soul in his body. He's done his own music for his films. He's really got a feel for music, but why would you imagine that a film based upon, you know, basically just, you know, the story of the Four Seasons and their ups and downs, why do you think that's got any particular juice as a Best Picture top tier thing? Just because of the Eastwood signature, and he's going to be...
Well, yeah, it's two reasons. It's one, everybody loves Christopher Walken in Pennies from Heaven. You know, that he has a great dance number in Pennies from Heaven. So I think a lot of people are going to... And he's actually quite a song and dance man.
Wait a minute. What does Chris Walken play in this thing?
Go to YouTube and look it up. Go to YouTube right now and go... Christopher Walken, Pennies from Heaven.
Oh, no, I know what he's able... He's a wonderful dancer. I understand that. But what is it that he's doing in Jersey Boys? He's not one of the Four Seasons. He's, what, a manager or something? Who is he playing?
Oh, so he's not going to be singing and dancing, is what you're saying.
Not to my understanding. I don't know enough about...
Oh, well, then I got it all wrong. No, I still think you have to put... Because he's Clint Eastwood, I think you have to put him at the top of the pile. Unless we hear that it's bad. You know, it's test screening right now.
Last night.
Did anybody write you? And
no. Nothing. Nope. I guess just nobody who goes to these things read or cared.
No, I know.
Nothing. Nothing. The usual people, I've had like a small list of people who always go to these things. Nobody apparently went to it.
Right. So it was an actual real test screening then. Then they're going to look at it and then they're going to tinker with it a little bit.
This is about the prime of the Four Seasons in their heyday. This is like, what, late 50s, early 60s?
Mm-hmm.
But they're all young, so obviously Walken, an older guy, I don't know what he's playing. He's playing somebody's father or the manager or whatever. But I doubt if he has anything that he does in a performance vein. That would be kind of bizarre.
Unless, Jersey Boys is a Broadway musical, it was. Is that right?
And still is. Now, it is on the stage, and it's been a very popular thing because people love, you know, jukebox musicals with, you know, songs they know. So, you know, it's been a very big
hit. Have you seen it, the movie?
I never saw the play, no. Never wanted to go. I don't like to go to Broadway musicals as a rule.
Right. No, I know, me either. I wish I knew a little bit about it. We need to get a Broadway geek on here to talk to us about the play.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It looks dull to me, but who knows? You know, we'll see. Maybe it'll turn out to be good.
Now, speaking of misspellings, I misspelled J.C. Shondor's film by calling him very violent, most violent video. You've got Interstellar misspelled.
Oh, no!
Well, it's an A-R at the end, not...
Okay, thank you for telling me that. I'll have to... That's how we know Roger Durling isn't reading our stuff anymore.
That's funny. He's a good...
He's not calling us up to tell us. Oh, God.
You know, right. He went to Africa after the Santa Barbara Film Festival?
Did he?
Yeah, safari, the whole thing. Kenya, staying in one of those cool condo-like hotels.
Oh, my God. I want their life.
So that's a pretty cool way to downshift. He does these downshifting vacations. And then, of course, he goes to Broadway and does all the plays. I'd love to do it myself if I were more flamboyant with my money, which I can't be. But I'd love to go and see Bridges of Madison County. Speaking of Clint, that's supposed to be the thing to see right now.
Oh, God.
You know,
wow.
In New York.
Yeah, I bet that's good. It's just so weird to me and so surreal that Broadway plays are now movies. You know, like there's just no... With all the talent we have in this country, that's the only thing they can really do is these things that will make money like that they can count on to make a lot of money.
Pre-marketed, recognition, people go to it. But it's not just, they did a good enough job. It's supposed to be exceptional if you read the reviews. I mean, it's quite good. Yeah, good music and the whole thing. I mean, people really flipped over it. Now that it's caught on, well, I don't know. But I'm going to try and see. I always go in for... You know, 3 or 4 days before Cannes is to adjust myself to New York, and it's not as crazy to go to France, because if you go right from France, as you know, you've been through this, your clock is all screwed up for quite a while. So
yeah,
Anyway. All right, your next film after Interstellar, which you believe is a top-tier film because Nolan is obviously imaginative, and it's going to be about time travel and wormholes and good cast, so certainly. But
right,
I mean, come on,
he's like Inception, huge Oscar movie, you know? I mean, it didn't, The Dark Knight Rises didn't get in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what were we going to do with that movie? I mean, that wasn't really,
mm-hmm.
it was good, but it wasn't The Dark Knight, you know?
Well, when you're saying top tier, you mean you think the Academy is going to be moved and taken with a movie about time travel that's going to be down in their wheelhouse? Doesn't that sound?
I don't know. I feel that there's a, and I'm about to try to write a column about this, but I feel that there's just a major shift happening right now in Hollywood and entertainment, and there are three big, huge things hurtling at us. Right, one. Tentpole movies are going to continue to dominate and be the only movies that Hollywood puts out and that audiences see, whether they're driven by Jennifer Lawrence, you know, or their fanboy movies or their family animated films.
Well, that awful Divergent, which I've been invited to, and I hate the idea of even watching it, but I guess I'm going to have to see it.
Right, so it's along those lines. And the second thing that's coming at us is China is about to overtake us as the dominant exporter of movies, according to Linda Obst in her book. I don't know when that's supposed to happen, but that's coming. The third thing is that television is eclipsing film in terms of daring, you know, provocative, satisfying work that people are talking about. The vital.
No question. That's been going on for quite a while now.
Yeah. This is where David Lynch needs to go. He needs to start making movies he needs to be the next guy they hire for True Detective.
Right.
Do something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know how movies are going to be able to stay relevant in this climate where it doesn't really make sense to make an actual drama.
Well, obviously we've got tons of things coming out that look pretty good.
They do.
I can't just say it's all down the drain.
Yeah. 10 years from now, who knows where it's going? I don't know where it's going, but it feels like a dying art to me in a way. It feels like everything's going to shift to on demand. I could be wrong, but that's how.
That'd be wonderful, Sasha. That's a good thing. But
what happens to the Oscars? Well, the Oscars have to then change. They have to not just award motion pictures in a theater. They're going to have to start thinking about motion pictures in a different way, possibly. I don't know if they ever will do.
No, you're right. You're completely on the money to say that they're going to have to start saying, well, listen, the people that are making movies for theaters, they're just not in the game that we... But you can't say that yet, really, even though you're completely accurate.
Can't say it yet, because... And then you have the Emmys to contend with. Well, the Emmys aren't the Oscars. The Emmys are nowhere near the Oscars. And the kind of stuff that we're seeing with True Detective and, you know, that kind of stuff, that's too big for the Emmys.
Yeah.
You know, it needs a bigger award. It needs to be, you know, considered for an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
I think, in my opinion. So I also think that the Oscars need to start acknowledging effects-driven films. They're going to need a category for best effects-driven film because there are so many of them and they're dominating the market, and yet they only have one category, best visual effects, and maybe sound, you know, and maybe art direction. But a movie like Gravity comes in and carpet bombs the Oscars, you know, because it's going to win all the tech awards, and it is an effects-driven film. And if they had an effects-driven category, it could have won Best Picture, Best Effects-Driven Picture, and shared the award with 12 Years a Slave. I just think that it's sort of unfair to compete. In other words, this year we would say, okay, well, Interstellar is probably your number one, you know, absolutely going to win effects-driven film. It's going to eclipse all the other ones. Well, what that does is it does two things. It elevates the quality of effects-driven films to aim to something higher, like Interstellar, and it also acknowledges a whole industry that is growing and is not going away anytime soon. The Academy is like a dinosaur in this way, you know? So those are the three things I see heading towards us in the next 10, 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Plus the Academy, the people that are in the position to perhaps suggest modernizations, like my idea, which I think is essential if they want to have any real relevance to the culture. They've got to wait the Deadwood vote so that it doesn't count as much, and they're not going to do that because they feel that it's going to offend people, and so they're just going to die. Organizations always resist until they die. That's what happens. They never make the step forward and say, well, let's try and address this.
Right. Well, they're going to have to with the effects driven. They're going to have to. They have no choice. Things are changing so fast that
you can't be really seriously taken with effects driven films, because effects driven films, 95% of which are effects that look like effects. And I'll tell you, there's nothing so boring, so just completely soul deadening as to watch effects that look like effects. It's the same.
Right. No, I know, but here's the thing. Like, they had animation films, Beauty and the Beast. It got a Best Picture nomination. They decided to have an animation category. They had foreign language films. They got Best Picture nominations. They decided to make a foreign language category. So why not make an effects-driven category if they're continuing to dominate and they're going to be pushing their way into the Best Picture race? And they should be. But they should have their own category. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people might disagree with me, but I think that's one way that you can help save films that aren't tentpoles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, you know, for the fifth year in a row, I think it's this year, let's see, you go 2010, Tom Hooper, 2011, Michelle Hazanavicius, 2012, mm-hmm. Ang Lee, 2013, Alfonso Cuarón or Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
That's all these are non-American directors, mm-hmm. all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then you have The King's Speech, you have The Artist, mm-hmm. you had Argo, and you have 12 Years a Slave. Well, you could say 12 Years a Slave is an American production, but the others aren't. And
I think it's very much a British thing.
What we're getting is a lot more imports. Our Oscars are going to be acknowledging and rewarding imports because our industry is no longer making the kinds of movies that Oscar voters will pick. And the reason they aren't doing that is because they're making fucking tent poles.
Hmm. Nonetheless, we still all want, feel that it's vital, feel that it's very much a part of what we really need as moviegoers, because we're believers in the church and the faith and Catholicism in general, to resign ourselves and say, well, the really good stuff, we might as well just accept it, is going to be won at film festivals and in marginal theatrical. Obviously, we've got several, look, you can't ignore the fact, Sasha, there's like 50 plus films coming out this year that are clearly aimed to engage and excite people like you and me. There's you can't just say that's all.
No,
it's all
not on, but it's going away, and it's going. It's not. If you go to Cannes, you know, they and all over the world,
mm-hmm.
except America,
mm-hmm.
they're making movies that are quote unquote Oscar friendly. If they didn't have the stigma of being foreign films, they would be more in keeping with what the Oscar voters like. Dramas, family dramas, like The Past, mm-hmm. last year.
Right.
Or period pieces, and or movies about heroes, you know. America is less and less focused on that because they're more and more focused on opening weekend. Well, if they're only focused on opening weekend, it's really easy to create a failure.
Yeah.
In two, three easy steps, you know.
Right.
And so we're going for only bankable. Well, as you know from going to Cannes, filmmakers and they don't have the same requirements. They don't have opening weekend. They don't have blockbuster. They don't make this kind of shit.
Yeah.
Because to them, you know, they want to make good movies. They want to tell good stories.
Right.
They want to do things that are different. They're still doing film as art. And in America, it feels like that's becoming less so, with the exception of people like, you know, these directors who continue to fight, and mm-hmm. David Fincher, you know, they have to fight for every movie they want to make. It's a big, big fight. Oh. And sooner or later, they can give up, like David Lynch has just given up. So people like David Lynch should not be giving up making movies. He should be making fucking movies.
Well, I don't have sympathy for him. He could make a long form. He really could. He could make another Twin Peaks-like long form.
He could, but I think he got killed. I think that last movie he made, it just killed his any kind of desire he had to make.
Well, some issue on his own creative engines, his own, you know, that's him.
Well, he couldn't get financing for it. Yeah. He went on Sunset Boulevard with a cow to get Laura Dern an Oscar nomination for it. Didn't work. Mm-hmm. Nobody saw it. The critics turned their backs on it. Mm-hmm. What does he have to motivate him to make a movie when that was his last experience, you know? I'm not saying people shouldn't have reacted to that movie badly. I'm just saying that we don't live in a culture that celebrates somebody like him. We don't live in a culture that would, Alain René, right, who just died, right?
Yeah.
And what was he when he died? In his 90s.
91.
Making movies.
Yeah.
They weren't really good movies, I don't think. I don't know, but the last one I saw wasn't all that great. But he was still making movies, and he lived in a culture and a climate where they celebrate him.
Alain René was on the, should be respected and acknowledged on the level of Antonioni and Godard,
right,
and major 20th century filmmakers, certainly in his introducing of time flips and ellipses and flashbacks and flash forwards and all that stuff, which was pretty radical when last year at Marienbad was seen in Cannes in 1962.
Right.
And the Oscars did not even include him in the death reel. They had a day and a half, or at least a full day, and that's not a big deal to put in an extra face and a little still montage. It's nothing, and they could have done it. And they didn't. They chose to do it. That's really one of the, that's one of the worst things that the Oscars has done, along with that horrendous decision that Gil Cates made years ago, in 2004, to give the emphasis of the death reel to Johnny Carson, rather than Marlon Brando, who rewrote the book on acting in the 50s, and they just had him as, you know, one of the people who died. The show should have stopped for 5 minutes about Marlon Brando alone, and
And
they made a big deal about, well, our friend Johnny Carson, who we all loved and who hosted for so many years, and he's our pal, so he got the big, you know, hoo-ha.
Well, Marlon Brando refused his Oscars, remember?
That's right. That's right. He was an asshole. People didn't like him. He was a pain in the ass, you know. But he was Marlon Brando, and they blew it off. They just made him one of the faces. That was one of the worst things they've ever done.
Yeah, that was stupid. I mean, But I'm just saying, David Lynch, I wish we lived in a climate that David Lynch doesn't fit into the opening weekend crap bullshit, you know, flying fanboys out to all the set of his movie. You know, that's not David Lynch. That's not who he is, but that's the fucking future of Hollywood, it's feeling like, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wish it wasn't the case, and I hope that it's not the case, and I hope the Oscars continue to fortify the base and award the good movies and celebrate the really great directors who take chances. And
sure.
We'll see how it goes. All right.
Why do you believe that David Ayer's Fury, a kind of a cranked up World War II thing reimagined in today's context, why do you think that's a top tier movie?
Probably not, but again, like, that's the one that I'm allowing myself to say, okay, fine, World War II, Nazis, Academy will go for it. Even though, you know, that's the kind of thing that, like, critics like to rake you over the coals for. You know, they think it's bigoted to say that the Academy voters are Jewish, therefore the Academy voters relate to and like and appreciate World War II Holocaust movies. But, you know, I feel like it stars Brad Pitt, and it's a period film, so it seems like a no-brainer that I mean, it's going to have to suck not to be one of the major contenders. And it might suck.
Okay. So. And we already talked about Inherent Vice, or at least I have, and I presume you concur about the elements in that. Into the Woods. Now, how could you say that a Sondheim film, yes, okay, Meryl Streep, Johnny Depp, etc., but still, anyone who saw Memoirs of a Geisha, I don't see how, and Chicago, for that matter, which I, you know.
Or what about Nine?
Yeah, so why would you think that a Rob Marshall film, given how he tends to make his films, and not, obviously, he knows how to make a film, and But to say that this is, all right, I'll give up. You're right. They're probably going to like Into the Woods. Okay, fine. You know.
No, I mean, I feel like you do. I feel like there's probably a high chance that it's going to suck, like Nine did, and it's a very good chance. But nonetheless, the Oscar bloggers, the sheep herders, it will be among their top tier movies. Thus, it will get a place in line early.
Right.
That's really how I do it. Like, what movie are the bloggers and stuff going to be putting on their list?
Mm-hmm.
And match that with the movies that I think have a lot of promise.
Yeah.
And then the hopefuls, you know, the little movies that pop up here and there that you want to advocate for. You know, that's the three-tiered way that I do my early predictions. I don't do predictions even. I just talk about what's on the radar, what's coming up. So you got to go with the ones that the bloggers are going to usher through, because they're going to give that movie a huge lead just by talking about it every 5 seconds, you know, and they do that with movies they think are quote unquote Oscar friendly, and basically innocent until proven guilty, considered an Oscar contender until people see it and go, wow, that movie really sucked, you know.
Now, why do you think the Cameron Crowe movie, which is basically a rewritten version of the one that he almost made with Ben Stiller and Reese Witherspoon, had a title called Deep Tiki? This was some years ago. And he rewrote it, you know, and it's, you know, maybe it's going to be okay, or a lot better, or maybe...
Who knows, right?
I mean,
hit and miss.
Right.
But to me, he's, again, innocent until proven guilty. It's going to be, people are going to consider that because he's Cameron Crowe and because he's never won an Oscar.
But this is not 2002. Almost Famous didn't come out last year. I think that there's something that I believe that... that most filmmakers who are good, they have a certain amount of memory and life experience and psychic essence that they can bring to films, and then they're repeating themselves. Then they're regurgitating, right?
Some of them. Martin Scorsese's not, but...
No, right. He's definitely not.
He's still Cameron Crowe. He still gets a chance. You're not going to just go, oh, yeah, We Bought a Zoo was so awful, so therefore I'm going to dismiss Cameron Crowe completely out of
hand. The end of We Bought a Zoo is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
It was. It had a nice thing about the dead wife and everything. That was a nice vibey quality. It wasn't very good in the middle, certainly it wasn't. And surely, you know, I don't know why or how anybody could accept or get behind emotionally the idea of a zoo anyway. It's so awful to have animals in a basically a prison. So I just didn't understand how he could have done that.
Cameron Crowe, it's very sweet. You know, he needs to, it would be nice to see him sort of change brains with Jason Reitman. Like, Jason Reitman's films are too, like, snarky and cold, although not Labor Day, which I liked better. But Cameron Crowe and Jason Reitman are kind of like, you know, the evil twins. You know, one's good, one's bad, but...
2 hours after Labor Day came out, you were saying, everybody in my gondola coming down from the...
They did, though. I'm telling you, they did.
And I was
saying... And, you know, I still like that movie. I don't care if they didn't like it.
But obviously the world said, forget it. Not this time. They did. So, the people in my gondola were more representative of the general populace and the critics, for that matter, right?
Yeah, I know, but I don't need everybody to agree with me to have an opinion.
No, of course not. Of course not.
In fact, I prefer to not agree with most people, and I don't care if they think what I think or not. But I did like the movie. I thought I admired Jason Reitman for taking such a huge risk in a genre that is aimed mostly at men. Mm-hmm. And you know, let's face it, all film critics are mostly men. Oscar voters are mostly men. You know, and that was a movie aimed at women. And you know, he just did it. He did it for his mom and. A lot of women that I talked to really liked it, you know, it's like your sad romantic side, but it's there nonetheless, and, you know, men aren't punished for their stupidity and the things that they like, but women are, so I liked it. Yeah, I thought it, you know, I still think it's better than The Blind Side and better than Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close, and the other shitty movies that have gotten nominated for Oscars, you know? It's not the worst movie in the world. I don't know why. I think Jason Reitman's now at the point where the worm has turned on him and people don't like him anymore. He's going to have to go back to making something like Thank You for Smoking.
Okay.
Like him again, I think.
Okay. Someone's trying to call, but don't worry. I'll just ignore it.
Okay.
Now the Birdman, we know that that's a comedy, and it's based upon, it's about a guy who used to be a superhero in a series, a television or movies or something, but it's about the a guy trying to I guess it's comedic. It is comedic, and it's supposed to be really good. So let's just let that go. But I presume that's going to be a Cannes film, so we can talk about that soon enough.
That's, yeah. You know, I didn't do my most personally anticipated, but yeah, you know, just a quick glance over, I would do Gone Girl, Birdman, Inherent Vice.
Right.
Those are the ones that, like, I'm really, 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 really looking forward to. The rest of them is kind of like, they're fine, you know.
Now, Boyhead, you have not seen, right? You didn't see that in Sundance.
No, did you?
Right? Yes, I saw that.
Oh, how is it?
Oh, everybody thought it was pretty good. I mean, it's really...
good isn't going to cut it.
Because they got a good story that you
like
believe.
You're not half bad.
No, it isn't. It really isn't. No, I'm not putting it down.
That wasn't half bad. That's like not half bad.
I know what it sounds like. I'm not putting it down. I'm just saying it's you know, they filmed it over several... years, like what, 12 years or something?
Yeah. So why isn't it great? I mean, why?
Well, it's intriguing to see a young boy go through various phases and have various adventures, and not adventures but dramas and you know, just struggles, you know, with alcoholic dads and things like that. But it's solid, and it's not just like a stunt thing where you get to see the kid grow older. It's really well put together and well acted, and Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette. It's
great.
Really,
so
know,
sounds good.
Up,
I mean,
thumbs up.
Yeah. I don't know how many of these coming of age stories I'm going to have to endure in my lifetime. Mm. It's like, okay, I get it. You know, really another story about a man coming of age, a boy coming of age, a man coming of middle age, a man coming of old age. It's like, I guess we just never get tired of examining the you know, the male in our culture. It must be endlessly fascinating for people. I mean, to me, it's sort of like a little boring, but I'll go there.
Yeah.
You know, coming of age, you know, haven't we just been there, done that with coming of age?
Yeah.
Really, come on. I mean, a woman coming of age might be a little more interesting than...
You do see his sister, by the way, who's played by Richard Linklater's daughter. She comes of age throughout the entire thing.
Okay, so it's not just about the boy.
Yeah, she's right there punching along with him, and you see her story too. So.
But it is called Boyhood.
It is called Boyhood.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. I mean, I'm not prejudicing against the movie. I'm just saying that...
Right.
I'm just getting, I don't know why nobody else is, but I'm just getting a little tired of this, you know, the precious male childhood situations. It's,
you know, it's interesting that A Most Violent Year, which is, that's definitely going to be in the fall picture. I was talking to the producer at Spirit Awards about that. And it's funny that the winter of 1981 is when it's set. That's when I was very strenuously struggling to stay afloat in life. And not really making enough, or making enough, but just barely enough to, you know, kind of get by. And I had a little minor job at the Film Journal, and I was, like, freelancing for Us Magazine. I don't have one sliver of a recollection about that being especially violent, or that being, oh, my God, so many shootings and so much violence in New York City. I don't have one, you know, wisp of a recollection along those lines. But I love that I'm so oblivious to the way things were.
Yeah, and so can you talk a little bit about that time? Like, what's this movie about? What's Most Violent Year about? I mean, it says it's one of the most violent years on record in New York, but what was happening?
Well, that means you want me to tell you about the script that I read, and what I read was I don't think I should talk about the film in particular because it was too much of an early draft, and I was literally told by Shandor that was not something I should be going on. You know, all things evolve, all things get refined.
Right.
So I don't know that it's, but it's, I know that Oscar Isaac gets to be the lead again. And
what does he play? Do you know what his character is? Is it a true story? I mean, is it based on a true story? Or is it just a story within this context of this time?
It's largely based upon actual crime events that did occur at that time, and there is a that and it got Javier also, who's in it. Javier Bardem, and Albert Brooks is in it as an attorney. It just sounds really flavorful. All good. It's like, it's basically, I think the idea is to make a really rich and tangy and flavorful Sidney Lumet New York movie. I think that's the thought. and to, you know, that wonderful immersion in New York culture with the grimy, you know, the hot dogs and the bad cups of coffee and taxi cabs and rain and snow. It just sounds like the kind of thing I live for movies like this.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm, you know, it's got a good cast. Jessica Chastain, obviously, she knocks it out every time she gets up to the plate.
Right, right.
And somebody, by the way, told me how to pronounce David Oyelowo, but he's in it too. And I shouldn't get into it too much because it's just
right.
Number
right.
one, because
basically, is it a story about a cop hunting down these killers, or is it, I mean, you know,
partly,
crime,
yeah.
Or is it
yep,
about...
it's killers, it's cops, it's lawyers, it's the whole stew of it. It's just one of those rich.
Okay, cool. I'm really looking forward to that. He never disappoints me so far with his two movies that he's made. He's just a good filmmaker. He's so careful and
yeah, exactly.
Got good ideas. He's right. Got a great team of collaborators that work with him, and they're just fantastic. All those. I wish them nothing but the best. I hope it goes well.
Now you said something about Reitman that he's that the town is maybe down on him now, and you do not believe, or you're skeptical about the. About men, women, and children, which is something that he's got with Adam Sandler, Jennifer Garner. It sounds like Parenthood, that Ron Howard thing.
Yeah, or This Is 40.
Yeah, yeah. So that right. sounds like a kind of an all-embracing thing that people would like.
What's I suppose. I mean, I don't want to rag on him because I think he's a good guy. And
yeah, yeah.
I told him that at a party when I was very, very drunk, and so I can't renege on that. But I will say that... I think one of my problems with Jason Reitman has always been that he hasn't really lived much of a life, because you're a movie star kid and you go to a private school and you live a sort of fairly pampered existence. You move right into making movies and you're semi-successful at it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you can bring to the table in terms of trying to explain real life to people. That was my problem with Up in the Air.
Yeah.
A little bit of my problem with Juno is sort of like, you know, it's funny, and I love Thank You for Smoking. That's still my favorite movie of his, and I liked Labor Day. But there's always that feeling of somebody who doesn't know this world trying to tell that world story. So I know he had a wife. She divorced him. And does he have kids? I don't know if he has kids, but...
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Maybe this is his world. Maybe he knows this world. So maybe this will be an interesting movie.
I completely believe the world in Up in the Air. I believe I completely related to George Clooney's character, feeling in a strange way more serene and more at peace when he was in airports and
yeah, me too, all that stuff. But when it came down to the sister and the marriage and the hometown and the
mm-hmm.
I repeated viewings of that movie. Like mm-hmm. the first time I saw it, I didn't think that at all, and then mm-hmm. later it just started to feel sort of a little fake to me, a little forced. But
mm-hmm.
I totally believe the George Clooney character for sure, 100%.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know.
Yeah. Now I got to tell you, Railway Man, which you have in your second tier, which is directed by Jonathan Teplitsky, and it's about Japanese World War. I'm telling you, that's a wash. That did not happen. It played at Toronto last September.
So take it out, huh?
It really is.
Well,
a wash.
I wish you would have told me this a couple of days ago when I had the post up.
Well, everything is evolving. You know, it's just an understanding or it's an
so
impression.
So you saw it and it's bad.
I'm telling you, it does not jump off the screen. It just sits there and it kind of does its thing. It's okay. It's not a terrible movie or anything. It's just that it does not have that electric crackle quality at all. And it's about, you know, recollection and going back and trying to make peace with a...
Well, what about Colin Firth? Is he going to get a nomination?
No, it's not on that level. I'm telling you. It's just, you know,
not on that level.
The movie is the diving board that provides the bounce to the potential of this or that performance. It doesn't have any bounce in the movie. It's just dutiful, and it's about forgiveness, about forgiving a guy who tortured you in World War II as a malicious Japanese prisoner of war camp thing. And
well, I'm still going to keep it on in case it's World War II, and the Academy might go for that.
I've been to that same Japanese war prisoner of war camp in many films, and I know how these things measure up. It does not do it. It's just
how weird that. Isn't there another one? Isn't the other one about...
Yeah, Angelina Jolie's film is going to be a... So here we go, you know, there's only so many ways you can skin a cat, and I think that this thing is,
Right, okay. Well, good to know. I'm glad you told me that now.
John Hamm and Bill Paxton and Craig Gillespie's movie Million Dollar Arm is a Disney film. That automatically means it's marginal and it's
right.
niche and it's family and it's friendly and sports. You know, he finds a Japanese pitcher, isn't that it? Or no, it's Indian, isn't that? He goes to India and finds pitchers. Where does he find this?
Some India.
Exotic,
cricket player.
Indian reality show, pitching talented cricket player. Exactly. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't think so, but that's...
Well, I mean, I don't either, but you never know.
You never know. Craig was a
rover... Nobody would have ever thought Slumdog Millionaire was going to do what it did just on the page. In fact, a lot of people thought it was going to go straight to video.
Isn't it coming out on the 16th of May theatrically?
Slumdog Millionaire?
No, Million Dollar Arm.
Oh, yes, May 16th.
and that is, if they had something that really had a bouncing... diving board quality, they could really kind of propel it into the ether of being something that people should really be talking about in terms of year-end accolades. They wouldn't have it coming out on the 16th. They would have it at Cannes and have it come out in June or July.
Right. No, they're not. They're obviously going for the baseball crowd.
Yeah.
The boys of summer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Look, it's slim pickings. You know, I just grabbed whatever I could see there.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be an Oscar movie, but
Jane Got a Gun you have here. That's a disaster. I mean,
I know, but you never know. Once again, you never know.
But Gavin O'Connor came in and probably did a good job of pulling it together and making it work as a film, but because you've classified it, you've decided that there's an element of a feminist Western in this, right?
Well, isn't there? I didn't read the script. Did you?
I never read the script. But you're telling me that it's a...
Knowing what I know about the writer, I would imagine it's a feminist, yes.
Okay.
The writer is like Chris Tapley's friend or whatever, and he's like a feminist dude. So I'm imagining it's going to be along those lines. But.
Now, maybe you can tell me something. Your next second tier is called The Good Lie. It's a Reese Witherspoon film. About a Sudanese refugee being adopted by an American woman in their new home in the United States. Now, she's got the other film that you've completely ignored here so far, the one in which she does the long-distance hike up the West Coast that's been directed by Jean-Marc Bellet, who did Dallas
Fires. Yeah, I saw that on your list, but by the time I put my list up, it was too late to add it. But yes, that's a good call on your part, yes.
And why do you like, or what do you find intriguing about the adopting the Sudanese kid? What is that?
I don't know. I just looked at it, and it looked, I mean, it has Reese Witherspoon in it. You know, it's a September release. It's a fall release.
Yeah.
It looks like maybe that's what they'll be going for.
Mm-hmm.
It's semi-important, quote-unquote, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
We'll see.
Yeah.
See about that. But interestingly, Reese Witherspoon was the original... she was going to be in the... and Corey Stoll is in it. He's great, too.
Okay.
She was going to be the... She had bought the rights to Gone Girl when it first came out, but she was too old for the part.
Mm.
David Fincher did it, so it's nice to see that she's got these other things going.
Because she is now more of a 40-something woman, and she's not...
Yeah, and the thing about Gone Girl is he was really smart with his casting, because he first wanted Emily Blunt, and she got pregnant, so he couldn't cast her, but he really wanted somebody that you don't necessarily know can be a viper.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be someone that you think is... That you don't... Like, for instance, Reese Witherspoon, we already saw her in Election be basically that character.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you pick any... Like, Charlize Theron, we saw her in Monster. Like, he didn't want anyone who was... That we have already seen go to the dark side. That's what I'm guessing. That's why he didn't cast it. But that's why I didn't think Reese Witherspoon... He probably didn't think she was right for it. People already have too much projected on her. She's not a fresh enough... actress, you know, a blank slate actress, which is what Rosamund Pike is, more or less.
Right. Now,
and I hope she's good, because I've never seen her be really good, and this is a tough role, so I hope she's very, very good in it.
Now, why do you not feel or believe that there's a potential, like a second-tier potential, for that James Brown biopic Chad Bozeman, who's
right.
Did you look at that? I mean, you know, musician. It sounds like another Ray. No, you don't.
No. What's it called again? It has a name.
I've got it written on my thing here.
I don't know. I think it has the potential, but it.
It's called Get On Up. And
Get
the
On
director
Up, right.
is from the...
Directed by Tate Taylor.
Tate Taylor, yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Doubt it, but we'll see. I love that Tate Taylor. He's so nice. I hope it does well. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I have high hopes for it.
Okay, last question, because you've done something, so I'm glad I inspected your list, because I don't have one clue about a movie called Blackbird that you like the sound of, Gina Prince Bythewood. I don't know what that's about. That's a talented musician on the brink of superstar and blah, blah. Who's in that, Blackbird?
I think it's an unknown black woman, but I'm not going to ignore a movie that's written and directed by a black woman starring a black woman. You know, I'm just not going to ignore it. So,
what kind of musician is she playing?
And it's such a unique story in this day and age. You know, all the stories we're reading about so far basically are the same deal. You know, over and over again, it's just a regurgitation of the central male figure. Blah 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 blah. This is but Danny Glover, Minnie Driver. Her name is like she has some weird name. Goo Goo.
What kind of music? I mean, is she jazz or a rock musician? What is she? But she,
I don't know anything about it. I just
okay.
looked at the title and looked at the filmmaker and, you know, mm-hmm. props. I hope it does well again.
Okay.
There's no reason to assume it won't, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right.
So.
Well, listen, like I say, the most interesting part of this conversation was you saying the way it's all kind of shifting and that somehow the Academy has to be a little more inclusive and addressing the way the really, really good, the better stuff is going towards television. But there's no, once again, there's no, and it's, and I know where it's going to go there, but and the people that are running the movie business are into stupid comic book CG tentacles,
yeah.
and they're not going to change.
Yeah, and people should read the Linda Opes book.
Yeah, yeah.
Sleepless in Hollywood, that's a real eye-opener.
Yeah, yeah.
Horrifying. But I just, you know, you can see the storm coming. You can see the perfect storm coming from pretty far off, and mm-hmm. it's not looking good. And one of the only things that holds up this kind of, you know, the films you're talking about, the films that we like, is the Oscar race. You know, that these movies are made.
Thank God for it, right? I mean, thank God that there's at least 4, 5, 6 months out of the year when there's actual some lifeblood.
Yeah, and people complain about it. The fanboys complain about it, but look at the wreckage that they've caused.
Yeah.
You know, look
yeah.
at that. What are we supposed to do about that?
Exactly.
So that, you know, I know it's overtaking Hollywood, but here's the Oscars. You know, there's Oscar Island.
Yeah.
Oscar
yeah.
Island is like, you know, we're taking refugees. We're taking actually good film refugees
yeah.
here. But pretty soon it's not going to be American films anymore because we're not going to be making those kind of films anymore, you know?
Hey, I'm perfectly content to live in a world in which it's the 4 to 5 months. It's True Detective. It's House of Cards. It's the film festivals that I go to. It's the movies that I stream that I hear are good. And just ignore all the crap. You know, it's just like a different... talk about Oscar Island. There's CG Stupid Movie Island also, and that's a...
Right. And the other thing we have to remember that I'm going to start doing more faithfully this year is I'm going to be paying a lot more attention to the Spirit Awards and to the independent...
Right.
Market and how that is really still thriving. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's really, we're really just talking about Oscar movies, studio movies, the way things have always been.
Mm-hmm.
The indies have infiltrated the Oscars completely.
Yeah.
But that's another area where you can continue to fortify American product is in the independent
mm-hmm.
spirit trajectory. So.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to cut out one part of our chat. I'm stopping it right here.